The messenger must have ridden through several nights to get ahead of us. But when we got back to Capernaum, there was already a message waiting from Joseph of Arimathea. Joshua, Pharisee council condemned you to death for blasphemy. Herod concurs. No official death warrant issued, but suggest you take disciples into Herod Philip's territory until things settle down. No word from the priests yet, which is good. Enjoyed having you at dinner. Please drop by next time you're in town. Your friend, Joseph of Arimathea. Joshua read the message aloud to all of us, then pointed to a deserted mountaintop on the northern shore of the lake near Bethsaida. Before we leave Galilee again, I am going up that mountain. I will stay there until all in Galilee who wish to hear the good news have come. Only then will I leave to go to Philip's territory. Go out now and find the faithful. Tell them where to find me. Joshua, Peter said, there are already 200 or 300 sick and lame waiting at the synagogue for you to heal them. They've been gathering for all the days you've been gone. Why didn't you tell me? Well, Bartholomew greeted them and took their names. Then we told them that you'd be with them as soon as you got the chance. They're fine.
I lead the dogs back and forth by them occasionally, so we look busy, said Bart.
Joshua stormed off to the synagogue, waving his hands in the air as if asking God why he had been plagued by a gang of dimwits. But then I might have been reading that into his gesture. The rest of us spread out into Galilee to announce that Joshua was going to be preaching a great sermon on a mountain north of Capernaum. Maggie and I traveled together, along with Simon the Canaanite and Maggie's friends Joanna and Susanna. We decided to take 3 days and walk a circle through northern Galilee that would take us through a dozen towns and bring us back to the mountain just in time to help direct the pilgrims that would be gathering. The first night, we camped in a sheltered valley outside a town called Jamnath. We ate bread and cheese by the fire, and afterward, Simon and I shared wine while the women went off to sleep. It was the first time I'd ever had a chance to talk to the zealot without his friend Judas around.
I hope Joshua can bring the kingdom down on their heads now, Simon said. Otherwise, I may have to look for another prophet to pledge my sword to.
I nearly choked on my wine and handed him the wineskin as I fought for breath. Simon, I said, do you believe he's the Son of God?
No.
You don't? And you're still following him?
I'm not saying he's not a great prophet, but the Christ? The Son of God? I don't know.
You've traveled with him, heard him speak, seen his power over demons, over people. You've seen him heal people, feed people. And what does he ask?
Nothing. A place to sleep, some food, some wine.
And if you could do those things, what would you have? Here Simon leaned back and looked into the stars as he let his imagination unroll.
I would have villages full of women in my bed. I'd have a fine palace and slaves to bathe me. I would have the finest food and wine. And kings would travel from far away just to look at my gold. I would be glorious.
But Joshua has only his cloak and his sandals. Simon seemed to snap out of his reverie, and he wasn't happy about it.
Just because I am weak does not make him the Christ.
That's exactly what makes him the Christ.
Maybe he's just naive.
Count on it, I said. I stood and handed him the wineskin. You can finish it. I'm going to sleep. Simon raised his eyebrows.
That Magdalene, she's a luscious woman. A man could lose himself there.
I took a deep breath and thought about defending Maggie's honor, or even warning Simon about making advances on her. But then I thought better of it. The zealot needed to learn a lesson that I wasn't qualified to teach, but Maggie was. Good night, Simon, I said. In the morning, I found Simon sitting by the cold ashes of the fire, cradling his head in his hands. Simon? I inquired. He looked up at me, and I saw a huge purple goose egg on his forehead, just below the bangs of his Roman haircut. A spot of blood seeped out of the middle. His right eye was nearly swollen shut.
Ouch, I said. How did you do that?
Just then, Maggie came out from behind a bush. "He accidentally crawled into Susanna's bedroll last night," Maggie said. "I thought he was an attacker, so naturally, I brained him with a rock." "Naturally," I said.
"I'm so sorry, Simon," Maggie said.
I could hear Susanna and Joanna giggling behind the bush.
"It was an honest mistake," said Simon.
I couldn't tell whether he meant his or Maggie's, but either way, he was lying.
"Good thing you're an apostle," I said. "You'll have that healed up by noon."
We finished our loop of Northern Galilee without incident, and indeed, Simon was nearly healed by the time we returned to the mountain above Bethsaida, where Joshua awaited with us with over 5,000 followers.
"I can't get away from them long enough to find baskets," Peter complained.
"Everywhere I go, there are 50 people following me," said Judas. "How do they expect us to bring them food if they won't let us work?"
I had heard similar complaints from Matthew, James, and Andrew, and even Thomas was whining that people were stepping all over Thomas, too. Joshua had multiplied 7 loaves into enough to feed the multitude, but no one could get the food to distribute it. Maggie and I finally fought our way to the top of the mountain, where we found Joshua preaching. He signaled the crowd that he was going to take a break, then came over to us.
"This is excellent," he said. "So many of the faithful."
Josh?
"I know," he said.
"You two go to Magdala. Get the big ship and bring it to Bethsaida. Once we feed the faithful, I'll send the disciples down to you. Go out into the lake and wait for me."
We managed to pull John out of the crowd and took him with us to Magdala to help sail the ship back up the coast.
Neither Maggie nor I felt confident enough to handle the big boat without one of the fishermen on board. A half a day later, we docked in Bethsaida, where the other apostles were waiting for us.
"He's led them to the other side of the mountain," Peter said. "He'll deliver a blessing, then send them on their way. Hopefully they'll go home and he can meet us."
"Did you see any soldiers in the crowd?" I asked.
"Not yet, but we should have been out of Herod's territory by now. The Pharisees are hanging on the edge of the crowd, like they know something is going to happen."
We assumed that he would be swimming or rowing out in one of the small boats, but when he finally came down to the shore, the multitude was still following him, and he just kept walking, right across the surface of the water to the boat. The crowd stopped at the shore and cheered. Even we were astounded by this new miracle, and we sat in the boat with our mouths hanging open as Joshua approached.
"What?" he said.
"What?
What?
What?"
"Master, you're walking on the water," said Peter.
"I just ate," Joshua said. "You can't go into the water for an hour after you eat. You could get a cramp."
"What? None of you guys have mothers?"
"It's a miracle," shouted Peter.
"It's no big deal," Joshua said, dismissing the miracle with the wave of a hand.
"It's easy, really. Peter, you should try it."
Peter stood up in the boat tentatively.
"Really, try it."
Peter started to take off his tunic.
"Keep that on," said Joshua, "and your sandals too."
"But Lord, this is a new tunic."
"Then keep it dry, Peter. Come to me. Step upon the water."
Peter put one foot over the side and into the water.
"Trust your faith, Peter," I yelled. "If you doubt, you won't be able to do it."
Then Peter stepped with both feet onto the surface of the water. And for a split second, he stood there, and we were all amazed.
"Hey, I'm..."
Then he sank like a stone. He came up sputtering. We were all doubled over giggling, and even Joshua had sunk up to his ankles, he was laughing so hard.
"I can't believe you fell for that," said Joshua.
He ran across the water and helped us pull Peter into the boat.
"Peter, you're as dumb as a box of rocks, but what amazing faith you have. I'm going to build my church on this box of rocks."
"You would have Peter build your church?" asked Philip.
"Because he tried to walk on water?"
"Would you have tried it?" asked Joshua.
"Of course not," said Philip. "I can't swim."
"Then who has the greater faith?" Joshua climbed into the boat,
and shook the water off his sandals, then tousled Peter's wet hair. "Someone will have to carry on the church when I'm gone. And I'm going to be gone soon. In the spring, we'll go to Jerusalem for the Passover, and there I will be judged by the scribes and the priests, and there I will be tortured and put to death. But 3 days from the day of my death, I shall rise and be with you again." As Joshua spoke, Maggie had latched onto my arm. By the time he was finished speaking, her nails had drawn blood from my biceps. A shadow of grief seemed to pass over the faces of the disciples. We looked not at each other, and neither at the ground, but at a place in space a few feet from our faces, where I suppose one looks for a clear answer to appear out of undefined shock. "Well, that sucks," someone said.